I had the weirdest dream. Hello, everyone. You know when you have those dreams where you know you wake up in the middle of the night, or sort of toward the end of the night, I mean, and then you go back to sleep
and keep having the same dream?
No.
Oh, I have.
I call those that's like the goes back to time, like when you goes back to sleep.
Yeah.
And Fred, I had this weird dream. I don't know what it was. It was you and I and Dan, and we were doing the show. And in the dream, you know how sometimes we don't start the show right away, like we take a bunch of time, and then, you know, a few minutes go by until Dan officially opens the program, Fred?
Yes, yes, yes.
So this is all I remember from the dream, but it woke me up, and I was like, all I remember is that, like, the entire show went by, and we still hadn't started the show.
Oh, it was one of those. It was something you ate.
It was such a weird dream that it actually made me smile in my dream. I'm like, wow, if that's your biggest issue, then you're doing all right.
That's like one of those dreams. Like, I have them often. I'm trying to get somewhere and I can't get there. You've had those dreams. Mm-hmm. I often wonder what that's connected to. Something you ate, something that happens during the day. I don't have them often, but when I do, they're severe.
But as far as
you call last night severe?
No, that's why I'm telling you that if I thought about, wow, like that's the intensity of the stress I'm feeling, that that somehow I forgot to get us to start the show. So and so I thought, well, today, because we do have a lot of stuff to get to, that we would not delay the beginning of it, because again, maybe that was my subconscious saying some of these pre-show things have become, you know, too much, and from time to time it's time to tighten it up, Dan.
From time to time it's time.
So are you ready?
Yeah,
because we were off last week. We have a lot of stuff to get to.
Yeah, no, I'm all ready to go. I've got this thing. That's what I do.
How about this for a tease? Today we're gonna have a grown-up talk about death. We're gonna talk about zombies. We're gonna talk about what do you mean, really?
I'm not into that zombie thing, but that's fine. You guys can talk about it.
Did you not see the picture that he sent you?
Oh, okay. Oh, we're going to talk about that picture. Yeah. Okay. You said we're going to talk about zombies.
Why do you have to... See, right away, you get a sour... Really?
That whole zombie thing is beyond
I don't want to talk about fucking zombies either, but Dan... How about this?
Okay.
Today, we're going to have a grown-up conversation about death. Dan Duran was a zombie.
Yes.
I want to talk about being punched in the face.
What?
And a legendary rock band.
This episode of Humble and Fred is being broadcast to the world from our state-of-the-art Humble and Fred studio in Toronto, from our Brampton facility featuring a prestigious pool, and from a trailer in the Kawarthas with the Danis Duranis bust. I'm Dan Duran, broadcasting live from the Richard Bullis Theater, and brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, our returning sponsor, Kelsey's Original Roadhouse, home of the Humble and Fred End of Summer 13th Anniversary Podcast Party on Wednesday, and our newest sponsor, Ridley Funeral Home. And now, here are two men who could rejoice in the harvest season and all of its bounty, but as the fall arrived yesterday, they grumbled because of all the extra work to rake up fallen leaves and how they hide golf balls.
Jesus.
It's Humble and Fred.
Yeah. Was that the entire show? That was very well done, Dan. Welcome, everyone. And it's Humble and Fred. And I don't want to get into the movies. I don't want to talk about zombie movies. But Dan was telling me about his week off, and one of the things he had to do was at the Peterborough Theatre Guild.
The guild.
Yes.
And I asked him, you know, what he had to do, and he said, "Well, I had to be a zombie." and I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah." I said, first of all, I said, "Are there any pictures?" And he sort of hesitated.
Right.
And then I asked him if he would send us the pictures while we had this segment.
What is it, zombie season or something? Has this got something to do with Halloween?
Well, the show that just started on Friday at the Peter Rose Theater Guild is called, it's two one-act in one show. So it's like The Ghost is the first show, and then the second one is How to Survive a Zombie Apocalypse. This is the second show.
Great.
Insane show.
The thing is, it's see to me. If you look at these pictures of Dan, can I just direct? I have to put this on Facebook now. Let me just do that in a second. But you see, Dan still, and I admire this about you, Dan. When his lady friend, when fiance Lisa asks him to do something, he just goes along with it, like. You know, and I got to be honest with you. I don't think, you know, if I certainly know you're not getting dressed up as a zombie.
No.
And I got to tell you, for me, I'm not doing it either. But the fact that you still will is to be admired.
Oh, wait a minute. If your new lady friend came to you and said there's some event going on.
No.
Will you please join me and dress as a zombie? You would say no. You would, eh?
I would say no.
Because...
No.
I think if Delise came to me and said, there's some charity here in Brampton, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, see.
More now that I think of it.
I don't know how
back
that...
hasn't bothered me in 22 years. Why now?
I don't know how that conversation would go, but it would be something like, and no. Yeah. Now, yeah. If I were being paid by a charitable organization... Then perhaps, then I might.
What's the payment threshold then?
Well, if I were being host, if I was hosting a thing or someone was paying me to be somewhere and they said, oh, and by the way, we'd like you to dress as a zombie, I would have to consider it because I'm a whore.
More than 100 and less than 1,000, somewhere in there.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah. My usual fee, Dan Durant.
Right.
Dan, what was this? Was that just for pictures or was there some kind of event or what?
Event. Well, it was the opening night, and we wanted to get some social media on the go, so we asked people to take pictures with us, and, you know, we just sort of, you know, camped it up in front of the, you know, we have sort of a little lobby display with each show that sort of reflects what's going on in the show, and that's Lisa's job. And she came to me, and I didn't say yes right away. I said, I'll consider it, and then said yes. And
A little bit of Dan Durant annoyance was creeping in there at that question.
Like, no, there was not.
How quickly?
It seemed.
Well,
you were on the road to annoyance. I could feel it.
Listen, if two guys know what the road to annoyance sounds like, it's us. We're like experts. So at first you were. Danny. At first, is it safe to say you were a bit reticent?
Yes, it is safe to say. That's why. And Lisa sort of mocked me. She says, "Oh, you have to consider it, do you?" So I considered it and said, yeah, okay, well, I'll help out. I just thought that, you know, like we both do a lot of stuff at the Guild. And
yes,
I just was hoping that other people would step up for that particular
Let
thing.
Somebody else take a turn.
Enough, we didn't do enough time. We didn't come up with the idea with enough time. And,
just quickly, Dan,
you know,
I don't know why.
It's one of those things, Dan, just like anywhere else in society.
Dan, yeah. Why are you warbling? Is it your internet connection? Because Fred's perfect. I don't know what it is going on there, but you've had a couple of stuttery moments.
My apologies.
Well, it's not your fault. I'm just saying. I'm just letting you know it's happening. You might want to check that.
Yeah. And we won't get into it. But last week I had a conversation with Dan.
Okay.
It's funny how you get all protective of your friends, right? Dan's had a couple of issues, and I get all steaming mad when I hear about these issues, you know, because, you know, running a place like the Theater Guild is not easy, you know, there's different personalities and different attitudes and, you know, budget tension and stuff like that, and he does so much work for that place. It's wonderful, actually, all volunteer. I can't believe how often he goes down there. And my thing, Howard, and I've said to you before, and I think you've agreed, I hope they realize how lucky they have. They've got it to have this guy. Can you imagine the resources, the handyman aspect of this gentleman, and he's always going down there and doing things for them. And this is just on top of it all, dressing up like a fool.
Well, no, I was going to say I agree with you. He's got a heart of gold. And if you, I'm going to put this picture up right now at Humble and Fred Radio. I'm just switching over to, and you'll see that even dressed as a fucking zombie. He's still he's still 10 times better looking than you and I. We could have gone to that thing and not have to dress up at all, and people would say, hey, look, there's a couple of zombies, a couple of angry zombies.
Howard, I'd love to rise to zombie status. I'd love to get there.
That's right.
That would be a good start.
Right now, yeah, right now we're at troll status. Okay, what's on your mind? Photo. Okay, here comes a, if you go to our Facebook page, I'm putting this picture up now from Dan Duran photo. Here we go. And you can see what we're talking about, because that may, you know, if you, if we had a program director, they would say, well, you should probably put that up there. Add photos.
So you're your inner program director.
Well, it's only because we've got eight people that watch this thing live.
Right.
Why isn't this one?
They want to know.
Fuck.
Anyway, it was opening night performance, and did everything come off well, Dan, without a hitch? And
yes, it went very well.
And all the work that you've done in the foyer and that, much appreciated.
Yep. It's, you know, there's still lots to do, but, you know, it's, now the fall season has arrived, everybody's focused again, and, you know,
there was no battle over the lights, you got to keep the lights dim in the foyer to add to everything, that atmosphere. Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Okay, if you go to our Facebook page, you can see it. Nice. Dan, it's right there. It's a picture of Dan and Lisa, also very, and a very attractive zombie. Zombie, I don't know, she's a...
I'll tell you, Lisa's son has a dog named Bo. Oh my God, what a sweetheart that dog is. I've fallen in love with it. Reminds me so much of Clifford.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Its disposition and its affection. And anyway, that's here and there. The people don't want to hear about dogs.
Lisa's son has a dog named Bo. Sounds like a country song. Lisa's son has a dog named Bo.
Actually, the full name of the dog is Bo Peep. I don't understand that. I like just Bo.
Right. Well, that's what they've... Nobody calls her Bo Peep unless they're, I guess, angry at her or something. You know?
Bo Peep. Like, it's like why when, did you shit on the floor, Bo Peep?
Sorry. It's like when I get angry with Stan, I say, Stanley. Like, what?
You
Stanley. No, I don't. I'm just doing what's called a bit in the business. Okay, so speaking of theaters, I'm going to make it seem, you're going to love this first part because you're like, did someone punch you in the face? But I, something happened to me. I was doing stand-up a week ago at this comedy festival that I do every year. It's the, yes, it's called the Jewish Comedy Festival. You know, there are Jews, Dan, in comedy. I know you'll find that hard to believe.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who knew? Who knew?
It's
one of those things that, you know, you just don't pay attention to, and all of a sudden there it is.
All of a sudden, Jews pop Jews up in comedy. Comedy. Like, where? And people were like, where have the Jews been all this year? All these years?
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. That little pager thing they pulled off was pretty cool.
That's hilarious.
Got to admit.
That was one of our little Jewish sitcom things. So anyway, I did this gig a week ago, and it went great. The gig was fine. I've done it like three or four falls in a row. And it's usually in a nice theater. It's not in a club. And this year it was at this, it's at some community center at Spadina and Bloor. And it was a soft seat theater, 250 people. And they had a stage. And then they have these, I don't even know what the name of these things are, Dan. But they're like almost like a giant projector, but a very thick one, not like a flimsy projector material, but a solid thick, you know, screen type thing. I didn't mean to say projector, I meant screen. So it's not a flimsy, it's not flimsy screen material, it's a very solid, a couple inch thick solid thing where they project people's names on them. Are you with me so far?
With you there. Yeah, it's very very thick.
So something happened to me. Something happened to me that has led me to believe that I can. That just going to pause this for a second. You know, you don't watch a lot of movies, or you know, you see people get punched in the head, like in an action film, like the one that you and I saw, Dan, Jason Statham. Yes. People getting punched in the head repeatedly, and you think, oh, I wonder if I could take a punch to the head. Well. I'm here to tell you I am 100% sure that I cannot take a punch to the head. And here's why. So I'm emceeing the show. I come out and do 15 minutes and I walk back and I bring on everybody. And the last guy is the headliner. He does about 45 minutes. And at the very end of the show, I walk out. And for the first time that night, I walk into this thick screen apparatus. like walk right the fuck into it with the side of my head. Like it put me on the ground.
Like, really?
Fuck. Well. Like, and the audience kind of gasped. Like it was that apparent that I had done something wrong to the side of my head. And I tell you, for about 3 days after, like my jaw was sore, and you know, like I can. I thought to myself, I wonder if these guys. First of all, have you ever been punched in the head?
Well, maybe as a teenager,
like really punched in the like really punched.
No,
the only time I ever have was in a hockey fight, and you know, you have your helmet on. Dan, have you ever? Well, Dan, you know, you're a gentle Aryan. No one's going to punch you in the head.
No, I've never really. Oh,
plus, look at that head; it's indestructible.
Yeah,
it's pretty thick.
I've had my head. I've not.
Well,
had
you must
head.
Have. You've bounded into things repeatedly.
I definitely have. Yes, I have hit my head many a time. There are scars on my head to prove it.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that was a stupid question. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you right now, it was something else. And at first, I thought, like, have I broken my jaw? Like, because it was like I walked right into this thing.
Did you like see stars and stuff?
No, but I'll tell you, like, even now, a week later, it's like I can still tell where it was, and that was just one where I sort of, I don't know why. I'd been on stage at that point 3 or 4 times, and I'd walked around it. And then all of a sudden, I guess I just wasn't paying attention. But fuck me.
Obviously. Yeah. Seeing stars, last year I did. My pool filter's under a deck, and you sort of got to bend over to go in there. And each year it gets a little tougher, as you might imagine.
I bet.
When I first had it, I was 40. Now I'm 68. And last year, I lifted my head a bit early, and I caught the edge of a 2x6, and I literally saw, you know, that little flash you get.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever you've had that sensation?
Absolutely.
When you banged your head? I had it last year. I was a little concerned, wondering whether I got a concussion or whatever, but I seem to have recovered. But it's scary stuff, especially inadvertent like that, when it just comes out of nowhere. How did you do it? How did you? Like, it sounds like it was a big thing. Like, how did you do it?
Because it there was a curtain that I walked through. So I'm backstage. I walked through the curtain and sort of had just forgotten that it was there. I had walked around it the other 3 or 4 times.
Right.
And I was just coming out to say, you know, thanks very much, good night. And I hit it. And it made me think for a couple of days. I'm like, you know, I really would be, I think all of us, but me especially, because I probably, you know, voted most likely to have somebody want to hit me in the head. I got to be careful.
Yes, that's true. Howard.
I know it. Somebody will tell me. Somebody on any given day could take a swing at me.
Yes. On any level, did the audience get to enjoy this?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, really? They saw it happen?
When I say it, like, I didn't go down on the ground, but it was definitely, I was definitely staggering around for a second, like, and I could say they knew something had gone wrong.
So the last two events you've been to, you've had episodes.
What was the episode before that?
When you almost flipped over the rope at the beer launch.
That's right. Yeah, I wonder what's going to happen.
You should start wearing a hockey helmet to all these things.
I forgot that I fell over at the Humble and Fred beer event. By the way, speaking of our another event, this is a Wednesday.
Yes.
We're very excited to have everybody at Kelsey's. And we really haven't talked much about the prizing, but there's all kinds of stuff going on. There's, if you donate $5 to the Boys and Girls Club of Canada, you get 3 free kids' meals. Kelsey's is giving away an $11,000 VIP Paddock F1 experience sponsored by Heineken. And all you have to do is come there, enjoy a Heineken, and scan the table thing for your chance to win. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Fantastic.
We will have 5 $50 Kelsey's gift cards, 1 free Wings for a Year card, and on your way out, you can get a $10. We have a $10 off a $50 coupon for their next visit. Okay. By the way, and how we're going to give away those cards? Do you guys remember what we're going to do?
Yes.
What are we going to do?
We are going to have people tell Humble and Fred stories.
No, Humble and Fred trivia.
Trivia, right? Humble and Fred trivia. That's what I meant. Yes.
So we're going to ask people, because a lot of people coming are Hundy Peas. We are going to do 5 rounds of Humble and Fred trivia.
Yes.
And
yeah, those 5 $50 cards are going directly to the people that come to our gathering.
Yes, so absolutely.
Good to know. And 1 free wings for a year card is fantastic too.
What was that? What was that noise?
Just thinking of eating wings for a year.
All right, Scruff.
Oh, okay.
All right, buddy. So all you have to do is come. There's still room. It's going to be pretty full, but there's still room. Humble and Fred at humbleandfredradio.com. And don't forget, every Thursday at Kelsey's. Every Thursday. And by the way, they also do half-price wings on Wednesdays. But every Thursday is wing night. That's the official wing night. Half-price wings, $6 Coors. And that night, for our Humble and Fred people, there will be chicken wings, spinach dip, nachos, veggie platter, quesadillas. And you can order anything off the menu as well. But you have to pay for that. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. And
hopefully, and there may be some sampling of Humble and Fred beer again, you know, with laws in Ontario and the way this works and that. We're still working on that. So that'll be maybe a call right at the line of scrimmage, so to speak.
But it's a possibility. So, Dan, I'm not sure if you want to stick around for this next segment. You're welcome to. I want Fred to do a little bit of, do at least one of our sponsors. And then we will transition to... Oh yeah, I know. I do have one more thing for Dan. Dan?
Yes?
Somebody sent us... No, you know what? I'll save this. It's a song from when Dan was a young man back in the 1930s. And apparently, Fred, apparently, even back in the 1930s and 40s, when Dan was a teenager, there was dirty, dirty songs. And when Dan comes back to do the news, we'll play one of those. Okay?
Wow. Right on.
So Dan, Fred and I are going to talk about the Tragically Hip documentary. Have you seen it yet?
No, I have not.
Okay, well then, you know what? You're welcome to hang around, or you can just go and do some trailer
stuff. I'll move on. Yeah, I didn't see it. I did get a recommendation from our friend Darren.
Yee.
That guy.
Yeah,
saying that he was. It's more than just if you're not into the hip. No, it's really well produced.
It's unbelievable.
Just a man wants to go and have some toast. Right, Dan?
Back,
yeah. Hi, Dan, go get some toast and then come back just after our interview at 8:30.
Okay? Sour rye. Hey, I use the term line of scrimmage. So I'll go right into Bodog.
Yeah.
And Howard, tonight, the Buffalo Bill, they host the Jacksonville Jaguar. All right. In fact, our friend Ivor Hamilton and our sometimes guest John Ellefson will be at the game tonight in Buffalo. The Bills, the line, 5.5. Bills favored the money line, -245 on your Buffalo Bills, who will attempt to go 3-0 on the season. All right? So that'll give you something to do tonight.
Yeah, man.
Whether you're a sports bettor, a horse racing fan, a poker casino player, Bodog, your number one source of online gambling entertainment, from their industry-leading odds, world-class sportsbook, to their fully loaded casino and racebook, they've been providing Canadian players with an unparalleled gaming experience since 1994. Bodog. All the NFL stuff's there, of course, among other things.
If we have time today, after our interview... Did you hear about what Ohtani did?
Yeah, like it's
super ridiculous.
Scary. They should check that, see if he's human.
Yeah. Well, for you people who don't follow baseball, and I'm not a huge fan, but Shohei Ohtani? Shohei?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shohei Ohtani's historic season was capped off last Thursday with something that, even if you're not a baseball fan, it will fascinate you, even if you're just into sports in general. It's something else. And most people have heard about it by now, but We'll talk about it later. In the meantime, on our little chat, you, Dan, me, Darren, Jamie, Earl, some radio guys. The big buzz this weekend was the Tragically Hip documentary, No Dress Rehearsal. And I want you to begin, because you know, I have a perspective on it that's not different. I mean, I enjoyed it, but and just as you said to Dan there, or as Dan said, you don't need to be a hip fan to appreciate this documentary.
True, but to be a hip fan makes you really, really, really enjoy it, especially us, you know, who watch that band grow up. I mean, really, like, you know, the early days of CFNY playing the Tragically Hip, and they were the type of band, if you were, we were doing the morning show or even before you arrived or whatever the timeline was, you would hear a song and think, oh, that's cool, and then this is when you hardly knew who they were. But I don't know, it's like I was on the verge of tears, like choking up almost the entire 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And I can't really explain it again, other than the fabulous job his brother, what was it, Mike?
Yeah, he did a great job.
That thing. Oh, it, like, unbelievable the job he did. And as emotional it is, as it is, if you're a hip fan and the whole Canadiana aspect of it, which was immense. How he pieced that thing together was just amazing. As I said to you guys earlier, the first night I watched three episodes, and I didn't watch the fourth because I didn't want it to be over, but I sat up straight in my seat without moving for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And it was an evening, and I never do that. I always fall asleep. I was just absolutely... I found it gripping.
If I can just interject quickly to go back to what you said about choking up. Like,
yeah.
And I'm going to get to my, I'll tell you how I felt later about it, but in terms of my personal interaction with the band. But yeah. Why it was, you know, maybe it's our age, but I did the same thing. I watched three episodes in a row in one night and did the same thing. I didn't comment when you said that, but I did the same thing. I saved the fourth episode till last night. In the three episodes, there were several times when it felt emotional to me. And I think it's because the pride that Canadians felt in the band and how the band, it was even less about the band's music and more about how we had this thing that united the country. The fourth episode, like that was, I was blubbering during parts of it. Like, I mean, not just tearing.
No,
I'm not talking about heaving sobs, but I was tearing up through so much of it. Like that, and that's why I wrote on my thing was just how well it was done, as you say, because it was very evocative. It could have been shitty, but it was very well done. The editing, the filming, the way it was pieced together, as you say.
But the Canadian, you know, here's another thing I learned. I never really appreciated the lyrics to the extent I do now, because a lot of that was explained. And the way Gord Downie felt, and how he brought lyrics about Canada into his songs. And now you know the songs, and then sometimes it takes an explanation. Oh, here's what he meant by that. And then you have even more impact.
Yeah.
And then the final episode, he's 53 years old, and how much they were loved across Canada, and how cruel to have him taken away like that. How could you not cry? And again, just the way they pulled you through the whole 4 hours was just like, I don't even know if his brother, I got to look into this. Does he have filmmaking experience?
I think he must. And
where did that come from?
And it was also produced by a bunch of, you know, it was produced by Jake Gold.
And no, I understand. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure there was, I mean, I didn't watch all the credits, but somebody knows, somebody who knew what they were doing did a great job. And Mike, his brother, just whatever it was, the right tone. It wasn't too, I don't even know if this is the right word. It wasn't too sort of maudlin. It was
Canadian, Howard.
It was.
It was
Yeah.
But just like the band, it wasn't so patriotic, rah, rah Canadian. You just felt it. You felt it. Like there's a scene in the fourth episode where they show the final concert from Kingston. Now, I knew this at the time, but I'd forgotten that there was watch parties across the country. Now, and it was just the right, again, it was rah, rah Canadian without actually being overt. Just watching those people from one end of the country to the other on the final broadcast, 11 million Canadians. The second most watched event in Canadian television history was a band from Kingston playing their final concert.
No, but see, that's, it wasn't the over the top Canadian, because that's what we're like. You know what I mean? I still maintain we're probably more patriotic than Americans are, but you know, we don't have to, you know, beat the drum. That's what I loved about it. Those guys, you know, and some of the decisions they made along the way, like you go, really?
Well, tell the Tower Records story. It's fascinating. Well,
Tower Records, worldwide record company, you know, at some point, and I forget exactly the timeline, you know, was to launch a new album or something, and they offered to have them play on top on the roof of Tower Records on Yonge Street there in Toronto, near Yonge and Dundas, I guess. And it would have been great, because apparently they were going to get distribution in Tower Records right around the world or something, and they said no. Because we're Sam the record mill.
Isn't
guy.
That great?
Like, I'm, you know, we always bought our albums at Sam's, you know, and Sam's has been good to us. No, we're not going to do that. Well, you know, people can talk a big game about, you know, having their, you know, artistic principles, yeah, and not giving in to the man. There's an example of putting your money where your mouth is, you know? I mean, seriously.
And those of us in the business all these years, and I mean, I didn't really understand this part of it. There was a lot of things that I learned, some of the nuance of the record company and the way record companies worked in those days. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things we always used to wonder is why, with as many great songs as they have, how they didn't break bigger in the States. And that also is kind of explained, because they made a lot of moves like that. And yet, it turns out they were pretty big in the States. Mm-hmm. By certain measures, like they weren't playing arenas in America, but as they said, they were playing all the biggest clubs you can play, and they had a certain amount of success, but they had the kind of success on their own terms. And as you just made a good point about, you can talk a great game, mm-hmm, but they were, and maybe that's another reason Canadians responded so much to them, because of their innate integrity about themselves.
Yeah, and really not giving a shit. Like, you know, when it comes to the pressures you get from record companies, you know, hey, guys, you have to do this. Well, okay, but we're not going to, because we don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty wild. You know, and they had good success. A lot of the border towns, like one of the tragically hip concerts I went to was in Buffalo. And, you know, that arena there was full.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's a lot of Buffalonians getting, you know, the influence of Canadian radio. And I think it was like that right across the country. You know, Americans in border towns could listen to Canadian radio and get a good dose of the tragically hip. And you often think, if they loved it, why wouldn't the whole country love it? But again, you know, that's a... I don't know if that question can ever be answered.
Yeah, but it's all a game, though. I mean, it's, mm-hmm, of course, like I used to say this even during the Edge years when I would, let me just save that part of the anecdote. But, you know, I used to say, given the songs, you know, I could name them. There was 10 hip songs, every bit as good as any REM song, every bit as good as any Stone Temple Pilots,
right?
Keep naming them. Big bands that we played on the Edge. And I used to wonder why aren't, because those songs were as good as, you know, Losing My Religion, you know, Ahead by a Century. Let's use those as a comparable. But you need the record company has to want to push you to radio. And in those days, for whatever reason, they weren't being pushed to radio the same way that those other bands were.
Well, you heard what they say, and I've heard it before, but it came up several times in the documentary, is there a single on this album? You know, and there's a certain ear and there's a certain taste and there's a certain appetite for what is a single. You know, they weren't really that type of band, you know?
Yeah, they've got, yet there are so many songs that are huge Canadian hits that, again, you know, that I think would be, again, comparable to some of the singles from some of those other bands. But they also had a bit of, maybe there was a bit of a Canadian flavor. And the fact, and we're going to ask you this question, because I thought of this during the documentary. If they had have been big in the States, if they had have been selling, you know, tens of millions of records, Alanis Morissette, you know, Michael Bublé kind of thing, would some of their appeal or some of their endearing qualities have been lost to Canadians, maybe?
I don't know. Neil Young hasn't suffered that, you know.
Yeah, but Neil Young doesn't have the same. I mean, respectfully, Neil Young isn't the same. Isn't loved the same way that this band is. Nobody is.
Yeah, but it's an era thing too. I don't know. Some people might argue that, again, a little older even than us. Who knows? But I don't know. That's a good question. We'll never know. I remember. I remember, yeah, with you, obviously, the morning that we were going to play the new Hip song, Ahead by a Century. And I remember the first time I heard it was on our show.
Yep.
You introduced it. Here's the new song by the Hip. And I remember the first time hearing that song, like getting shivers and thinking, fuck, this is a great song. Like the first time I heard it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's one of their biggest hits of all time. And then just again, the whole 4 hours, yeah, Ahead by a Century, Bob Cage, and all these great songs that, you know, over the years, I mean, he's been dead almost, what,
seven years
now. A lot of these things you take for granted. It takes something like this documentary for you to stop down and go, whoa, you know, I should have maybe even concentrated a little more than I did on what they were delivering.
Well, I'll tell you, that's the great segue for me, because I didn't appreciate it. I didn't appreciate, and I've said this about CFNY music in general, and the radio station in particular, but I was trying to explain this to my new lady friend yesterday, that, I felt watching this documentary, because I was talking about it with her, I felt a little bit stupid, and not ashamed, maybe that's not the right word, but I felt like I missed out a little bit because I didn't concentrate on them. For the reason that when music was playing during our show or any show I ever did, I was concentrating on what we were going to say next. What was the next thing that we could do that would be have some impact on an audience? And, you know, we all know I was, a bit monofocused, a bit driven, a bit arrogant, and I kept watching this documentary thinking, man, you know, I really wish I had paid more attention because I had every opportunity to. There was every chance for me to know these guys. Now, I ended up golfing with a couple of them. Gord St. Clair and I played some golf together over the years. But I don't think I ever appreciated them and the impact they were having at the time when I was at a radio station that was part of the impact that they were having. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but, you know, during that time, you know, to be fair, I mean, you worked at a radio station that played the band, but then that was pretty much every radio station eventually. It was such a cultural thing. You know, this is a campfire band. This is guys getting together for the weekend and cranking the Tragically Hip thing. You know what I mean? It was and if you weren't really into that thing, you maybe appreciated the, yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But again, the actual culture of that band and just the rawness of them.
Well, but okay, and I appreciate you saying that, but I have a friend, a guy our age, that when I met him, was in our late 30s. Our wives were pregnant at the same time with our youngest, and so we became friends. And and I know you've had this experience. People assumed because we worked at that radio station, that we were as into the music as they were. Right. And Fraser, my friend in particular, loved Gord Downie.
Right.
And was a bit shocked that I had sort of a arm's length relationship with the band and other bands that we played. because, you know, again, to me, music was playing in the background while I was trying to see what I could do, or you and I could do, or what bit we were going to do. And, you know, and I was telling my friend yesterday about this thing I used to do. And I told her the story of Jake Gold getting fucking mad at me because of the bit I did in those days. And I just, I did it because I've got a reaction. I was just a, that's what I was trying to do. So the bit was a tragically hip song would end, for instance, ahead by a century, let's say that. And I would say, Edge 102, there's 50 Mission Cap and the tragically hip. And you'd go, no, 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 Howard, that's ahead by the century. I go, oh, I, really? Because they all sound the same to me. That was my bit. And,
No, I get it. But I, as I say, you know, and you, you mentioned Frasier. I mean, from my experience, I was the same way. I wasn't really listening to the music while it was on during our show. But again, you know, during that era, you know, every weekend it was up north, and it was just amazing to hear the tragically hip everywhere. You know what I mean?
So I didn't have that experience.
Yeah, and one thing I and I don't know how old my kids were. But I really, when I really get into the hip and was going to some of the shows, I wanted my kids to see them.
Mm-hmm.
So they were on Maple. I took them to Maple Leaf Gardens to see them, and they weren't that old. But I just thought it was important for them to go because I was playing a lot of the music in the house. And again, they heard so much of it up north, and there was young guys up north going to all their concerts, no matter where they were. I mean, I think the kid beside me, Daryl, who's got the trailer beside me, I think he's been to like 40 hip shows over his life. So it was such a huge part of the culture, and the kids were so much aware of the name of the band and listening to us play it, that I took them to a concert maybe before they should have even gone. But
well, that morning we did some hip promotion at the Masonic Temple in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Jake, who has become, you know, I've become friendly with Jake over the years. He's on this show now, and we've, you know, joked it around quite a bit, Jake Gold and I. But that morning, you know, speaking of people that want to take a swing at me, he had heard me doing this bit for a while, and he was fucking pissed off at me. And he put me up against a light post, and I kept saying to him, Jake, I love the band. It's just a joke, because I was just trying to do jokes.
What did Stewart think of that, though? Because you know what it's like? It's like pissing on your brand almost.
I know.
You know what I mean?
I don't know what he... Stewart, by the way, was our boss at the time. We got to wrap this up.
Yeah, our program director is like, hey, maybe it's not a good idea.
But I didn't do it all the time. I just did it once in a while.
I know.
Because I was mainly trying to make you laugh. we got to wrap up because Brad's standing by. But just suffice to say, it's something that... Everyone's aware of this band and the tragedy of the tragically hip, losing Gord Downie, the poetry of his lyrics, the kind of guy he was, the kind of guy the other guys were. Like I said, I got to know a couple of them because of golf. And again, even golfing with him, didn't appreciate it at the time. I just thought they were just a couple of guys from a band.
And you know what just oozed out of, especially that final episode, like Paul Langlois, he's still not over it. You can just tell.
No, I know.
Well, none of them are, but him in particular, that was his best friend. And, you know, as it's explained, like it's over, like poof, you know, and those guys, quickly, that whole idea where, you know, it was even Gord said, yeah, you guys, you know, when I'm gone, get a new singer. And they absolutely not. With all of them, less than zero interest in having another singer. You know, when they did that little awards thing and they got Feist to sing, I thought that was perfect.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't some guy trying to sound like Gord Downie. But anyway, that's here and there.
No, it was great. No, it is. It's you know, some of the guys in our chat were talking about watching it again. I don't know if I'm going to watch the whole thing again, but I'm going to watch the fourth episode, the last episode again. All right, making his debut as one of our supporters, his first episode. Please welcome to our program. Well, he's actually been on the program before, so it's not really fair. From Ridley Funeral Homes, Brad Jones. Hey, my friend, welcome.
Bradley.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're great. We're just maybe overheard us talking about the Tragically Hip documentary on Prime came out a couple days ago. Were you ever a Hip fan?
Absolutely not.
Really?
Really?
Wow.
Yep. Yep. No, it's I don't like their music.
Well, that is, you know what? There you go. That's a great example of it's not everybody likes every form of entertainment. You know, I talk about that with comedy all the time when people say, oh, I don't find him funny. And I say, well, I don't like country music. So there you go.
Well, one of my best friends is like that, too. Doesn't like the Hip to the point where he makes fun of them. And I don't like that. But hey, you're right. Different strokes.
You know, we've had conversations about the death industry, and that's kind of where we're going to begin with Brad, who's been in this business for a long time. I actually found out that Brad went to school with another friend of mine, a golf buddy of mine, who was in the funeral business. And it's funny when my friend and I were having the conversation about you guys, that I thought to myself, I didn't even realize this is going to sound dumb. I didn't realize you even go to school for it. What is the actual course called?
Funeral service education.
And is it
it's pretty simple.
And now how many year course, and where do you take that course?
You used to be able to just take it at Humber College North Campus, and now it's they also teach it at the French school up in Sudbury, College Boreal. But it's 1 year school, 1 year internship, and then you write your government exams.
And why did you do it? Were you connected to the business prior to that?
No. No,
really?
I'm a first-generation funeral director. So I guess my interest came when I was young. I was, you know, my grandparents died, and I found the whole process interesting and mysterious and wanted to learn more. Used to throw snowballs with funeral directors in Hamilton, where I grew up. Funeral home just down the street. We would be chucking snowballs at them when they were bringing bodies in.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, things that kids do.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I did a co-op when I was in high school, and it piqued my interest. It was either that or become a history teacher, and this was easier than going to school to become a history teacher.
But Brad, you said something interesting there, too, because you said you're a first generation, which is not, is that not the norm? Because the guy that I was hanging out with, his family's been in the business for a while.
Yeah, he was a fourth generation.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
So that's more the norm. So, so when you say you did a co-op, and were you not, because for most of us kids, funerals and death and cemeteries were sort of scary and mysterious, but something about it, you didn't seem to mind.
Yeah, no, I found it more intriguing, you know. I found the whole thing mysterious, and I figured the best way to learn about it would be to do a co-op there and, you know, check it out. You know, the worst part about it is I went and spoke with the funeral director manager. It was probably back in December because my co-op had started in January, and I used to have long hair halfway down my back. And he says, "Yeah, you know, well, you know, you can do your co-op here, but your hair has to be shoulder length." So I stewed about it for a couple of weeks, and then I was like, "Okay, I guess I'll do this," and had short hair ever since.
Wow!
So part of being intrigued by the business, when you went to college, did you realize too, like, "Hey, this can be pretty lucrative too. This is a." Beyond the fact that you were interested in it, this can provide a pretty good living as well.
Yeah, I knew for sure I wasn't going to work in a factory. You know, I used to joke with my dad because he was a salesman. He used to wear a suit and tie every day. And I used to say, I'm never working a job where I have to wear a suit and tie.
Yeah, same here. You know? Yeah.
And then a job where I'm wearing a suit and tie. And, you know, sometimes we even wear our you know, come fall and winter, we'll be putting on our vest again. So we're wearing a three-piece suit, and it's morning suit. And I remember he came to visit me once. I was working here for a few years, and he comes to visit me for something. He was coming through, and he starts laughing as soon as he walked in, seeing me wearing the suit. He says, "Yeah, I thought you weren't wearing one of those."
Brad Jones from Ridley Funeral Home is with us. Brad's podcast, by the way, Brad has one. Is called Life's Undertaking. And I want to go back to your origin story in a second, but on your podcast, what are the kind of things you talk about?
Exactly what the title entails, Life's Undertaking. I talk about, you know, living above a funeral home, raising our family here, what we do in the funeral home and what my life's like. And, you know, sometimes we'll have guests on and we'll talk about stuff that's, you know, bereavement way. But most of the time it's just talking about what I'm interested in talking about that day.
But your mindset, like, you know, I've often thought dentists, I wouldn't want to look in somebody's mouth all day long. It, you know, in doctors, it's nothing but people's problems. You're around a lot of anguish, like when people are having funerals, so, you know, they're not in the happiest mood. So how do you deal with that day after day? Like every funeral, there's somebody crying, there's somebody screeching, whatever it is. What's that like?
Yeah, like we see some of the worst things. It's, you know, we find it interesting that, you know, when there's, you know, a traumatic car accident or, you know, something that's horrific that happens in our society.
Yeah.
You know, the first responders get there and they're there for a little bit. You know, they come in, they see the scene, they're in there for a little bit and they get all kinds of supports, which is great. Mm-hmm. Right. There's a lot of bereavement supports. There's all kinds of things because it's publicly funded. So it's easy for us to do that as a society. For us, you know, we go into the exact same scene. We pick up the person from, you know, where the accident happened or, you know, sometimes it's the coroner's office, but we do all the exact same stuff. And then we bring them back into our care and we spend hours with the deceased.
Right.
And somebody else spends hours with the family arranging the services. And then you spend a few days with the family. And yeah, you're right. You know, you're absorbing a lot of trauma and a lot of anguish and, you know, tears and all kinds of other stuff. But, you know, there's no outlets for us. There's no supports systems for us in society. Mm-hmm.
So what do you do to help offload some of that stress?
Well, I would say, you know, 40, 50 years ago, most undertakers would have, you know, turned to a bottle. There was a lot of alcoholism in funeral service back then. But I think as we've developed and we've evolved, I think we most of us have to figure out what works for us. So for me, it's exercise. I go work out. That's why I'm, you know, all kind of still sweaty wearing a ball cap. I just came from the gym.
Nice.
You know, so you exercise, you find an outlet. I do, you know, go walk. A lot of us, you know, older generation of my generation are somewhat spiritual or religious. So, you know, that's an outlet. And then finding something, you know, the funeral service is a lot of humor, right? We joke a lot.
Yeah,
I can imagine. Yeah. I mean, seriously, just to go back on something you said, I didn't know that. I've just learned something that funeral directors can actually go to the scene of an accident.
Yeah, that's who does the transfer from. Yeah, there's a funeral homes do the transfer from the accidents and bring people to the coroner's office.
Wow.
The Americans have like coroner vehicles and, it's, you know, those are actually usually run by funeral homes as well. But that's something everyone sees in the television series, right?
Right.
Someone comes in a coroner's vehicle and does a transfer. But no, it's the funeral homes that do that.
And not to get too graphic. So if somebody is in a horrible accident and they're, you know, dead at the scene, you go get that body and you have to clean it up?
Well, I don't actually do it anymore, but yeah.
No, but I'm saying a funeral home does that.
Funeral homes, yeah.
Yep. People do that.
Yeah, you have other people. So back to what you said, where we're talking about, you know, stress and how you mitigate. Do you think being around death as a business, do you think it gives people in your business more of an appreciation for life?
No, absolutely. Yeah. You learn to, you know, to live your life with no regrets, right? Enjoy every moment. Like, you know, there's some people that say, oh, live like it's, you know, your last day. It's like, well, if it was living with my last day, I would be probably drunk or, you know,
okay,
doing something or eating all kinds of gluttony food, right? But no, I think you just got to live your life. And, you know, I think when you see all these things, you appreciate things. So you tell the people that you love them. You know, the people you want to spend time with, you spend time with. And those that, you know, are not good for you, you do a better job of cutting those, cutting them off and moving on.
A funeral can also be a beautiful thing. If someone dies in an accident, I guess the texture, the feel or the atmosphere of that funeral is horrid. But if somebody lives to be 90 and they've, you know, enjoyed a good long life and they die peacefully, I imagine the whole texture is different in that situation, right? Obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm not going to say like a baby's life isn't as important as an adult's mm-hmm. life. That's, you know, live 90 years and mm-hmm. have all these experiences. But I think it truly is easier when someone's lived a good life and a full life and, you know, they go out on their terms.
Yeah. Yeah.
And with your kids, I know you have, is it five kids?
Six.
I forgot. When, by the time you get to this, we've got a couple each. By the time you get to the sixth one, are the other ones, like, they're the ones raising that one? Are you even aware of where they are at all times? Do you have, like, little, they have little radar packs? The kids growing up living above a funeral home, do you think it gives them a better appreciation for the way the world works?
Yeah, yeah, I definitely. My father-in-law died a week ago Saturday, and we got to spend some time with him prior to him dying. And I was really impressed with how all of our kids did. You know, our oldest is 30 and our youngest is 14. And our 14-year-old, I'm not going to say she worked the room, but, you know, she was going around comforting other people in the room. Mm-hmm. I watch that and I think, yep, you know what? They understand what this is like. They understand that we're all human and, you know, we have connections and, you know, it's just not my grief. It's somebody else's grief.
What about have funerals changed over the past generation? Different attitudes, what people want, what they're looking for as far as, you know, services and, you know, expensive casket and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, funerals are so different than they were even when I entered it like 34, 35 years ago. Mm-hmm. People's choices are vast now, you know, and I think there's a lot of people that just aren't connected to, to religion or to their heritage.
Right.
So there's not that connection even to the land here in Canada like there is in other places. So mm-hmm. you see a lot more people having cremation, having different types of celebrations. The one thing I always find interesting is, you know, I hear a lot of people say, oh, I want to have a party. I want to have it to be a celebration. Mm-hmm. And we're going to work with you and do whatever you want. But, you know, you try to reassure them that, you know, I know that's what we want. And, you know, I always say the same thing. I want people to be happy. I want people to be, you know, celebrate my life. But I also know that when you're celebrating someone's life, you're also going to be grieving. And I think as a society, we're trying not to to grieve. I think mm-hmm. we're trying to, you know, always be happy. It's almost like social media is trying to take over a funeral.
That's
it's
a
like,
great
look
point.
How good everything was. It's like, yeah, everything was great. But now it's like, you know, I'm sad, you know?
Yeah, well, the celebration of life thing, and again, I've been to several, it's the one thing missing at those are the person you're celebrating. And I can't. I was at one a few months ago, and it's like we're all there laughing and reminiscing about Jimmy, but he's not there. Was it Curb Your Enthusiasm, the thing where somebody was at their own funeral?
Yeah, it was Richard. Actually, ironically, it was Richard Lewis who wanted to be at his, who wanted to see what people would say about him. Ironic, because he died a little bit later. But you know what you said about people not turning, as a society, we want to turn away from anything that, you know, gets in the way of our enjoyment, including. Mm-hmm. But funerals are they're a sad event. You know, I did the eulogy at my own father's funeral, and it was really hard. It was a tough day. Mm-hmm. And part of the thing about grieving, and I wanted to get your thoughts about this, is I tell people, you can't go around it. You have to go through it. Because if you go around it too much, you never get through it.
Well, it's like anyone that's had a health issue, right? You know, you think you're from your diagnosis to your, you know, getting to the end point and, you know, being healthy again, you figure there's like a straight trajectory. But, you know, anyone that's had a health issue, you know, there's ups and downs. It winds, it curves, it does the exact same thing. And it's like grief. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to and I spend a lot of times at visitations and funerals. And, you know, I watch people and I see that, you know, the spouse of, you know, 30 years, you know, laughing when someone's there talking to her about something. The next person walks in the room and she's just in tears.
Right, right.
You know, and it's like an emotional roller coaster. And that's what grief is all about, right? Everyone doesn't go through it the same way. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, when she wrote those stages of grief, it was probably one of the worst things for us as a society, because people start looking at that saying, well, I'm not there, I haven't got there, or I don't feel, you know, good about this. And, you know, I think everyone's journey is different.
And there's a lot of people, when they're alive, if they're not well, they get old. I've known a couple. I know funeral. I don't want a funeral. I don't want people to go through that. Do you ever have funerals? Sort of the family has decided, okay, didn't want a funeral, but you know what? We think it's the way we want to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, this is what we always tell people is, you know, like, yeah, the funeral is a rite for the dead, and it's R-I-T-E, mm-hmm. but it's a rite for the living too, right? Mm-hmm. It's something that, you know, some people need. I'm not saying everybody needs to have a funeral, but
right.
I think every life needs to be acknowledged. And, you know, sometimes for a family, it's like, you know, we don't have a lot of people that were around, so we're going to do something on our own, right? So we'll have our burial, or we'll have our cremation, and then we'll just have our entire family get together for a dinner. Mm-hmm. You know what? That's the exact same thing. You know, you're celebrating this person's life, and you're getting together with your support groups. And that's what a visitation and a funeral does for people, is it shows them who's there to support them, right?
Right.
So, you know, yeah. You know who to give a call to when you're feeling down.
You know, getting back to your story of your father-in-law passing away and how you got to observe, you know, how comfortable with the process your children are, and your 14-year-old work in the room. I think that's a big thing for our society. You know, we used to be so connected to one another, grandparents living in the same home, and kids got to see them pass away. And whereas now, as everything is so isolated, and I think one of the things people, one of the many things they're uncomfortable with is, what do you think is the thing to say when you meet somebody who's had a death in their family? Like, what is the proper thing to say? Like, sorry for your loss, peace be with you. What is a good catch-all for that situation?
Yeah, I think sorry for your loss is a great one. You know, I think, you know, I just to say that you're there for them. I think, right, you don't even have to use words, right? I think sometimes it's just, you know, to reach out and shake someone's hand or to give someone a hug. It's an amazing, I think we've lost that physical connection with each other to the point that when you actually do give somebody a hug, it's amazing how, you know, especially at a, you know, when they're experienced a death, like how long they hold on to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I have to ask you, you live above the funeral home. Any like stories, spiritual things, or like, okay, well, we're like the ghosts,
where the dead people got up and came upstairs for dinner. Yeah. Is that what you want to know?
Speaking of zombies, but no, like,
no,
any of those stories? No, okay,
no, not our funeral home, absolutely zero.
So just for the record, Ridley Funeral Home, zero zombies and ghosts.
Zero. Yeah.
It's funny because I was last week, there's an old hotel up near my trailer, and we had some guests up, and a guy that had been around there as a kid, as I have, and we were talking to the woman in the old hotel, and she's telling us all these ghost stories, right? And it's like, okay, oh yeah, if you go through that room, if a kid goes in there, they're going to start having a conversation with somebody that was here 140 years ago. And it's just like, oh, okay, all right. Anyway.
But I'm always fascinated because, again, when my dad passed away, you know, there was a lot of people get very awkward around what to say. You know, one of the things they say is, and it's a weird thing, how old was he? Because I think people in their mind have a number. Like if, you know, somebody passes, we were talking about Gordon Downey. Mm. You know, someone passes away at 53, you know, there's a different reaction than, you know, I tell people, well, my dad was 84. It's almost like they're relieved. You know what I mean? It's almost well, and I used to go, I'm sorry, was my dad hogging the planet? Was he getting, so do you find that too in your business, that like older people that pass away, there's almost like a different vibe to it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, and you know, some people, I think it's relieved. It's like, okay, I've outlived that one.
Mm.
There's a little bit of that. Right.
Well, the average Canadian male lives to 82. So if you beat that, you got to feel sort of good about it. Right.
Yeah.
You know,
well, no.
Hey, what about this? What about this one?
oh, I'm sorry to hear about your mother, but she's with your father now. She's with your father now. That one always seemed a little loose to me as well.
That's right.
Yeah, you're right. I think a lot of people just don't know what to say.
No.
Right, yeah.
And then they just keep talking.
Oh, no, I know. Another one I heard a lot was... we hear you lost your father. Oh no, we didn't lose him. We know where he is. Oh, trust me, I've got a pretty good.
I always feel like saying, you know, should we get a search party going?
That's right.
You can use. Here's another one I did. They would say things like, "Was he sick?" I go, "Well, he died. That's pretty sick." Okay, Brad Jones. This is just our first introduction. We wanted to get people to get to know you again, and then. In the coming months, we're going to talk about what actually happens at Ridley Funeral Home. And if you want to go to the site, it's ridleyfuneralhome.com. We're thrilled to have you along with us because we think it's a very great evergreen topic. And each time Brad's on, you know, if you have any questions or you'd like to know about the business and all the different options, Brad's your guy. And if you want to check out his podcast, it's called Life's Undertaking and is available wherever podcasts are produced. And Brad, great first appearance. And, you know, go get on your funeral. there's not a funeral where you can show up with the ball cap and the sweatshirt. No,
Nope. I'm going to go and have a shower and hop into my 3-piece suit and go to church. So,
well, listen, man, it was great to speak to you and looking forward to your next appearance.
All right. Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks, pal.
Okay. See you later, Brad. Take it easy, bud.
I used to do those jokes in my act, but I would start off like I'd be in the middle of doing something and then the audience would laugh. And then I'd say, okay, listen, I want to tell you my dad died, and there would be this big silence. I go, no, wait, it gets funnier. It used to make me laugh, because we could just fucking hear people go, what? And I go, no, relax, it gets better. And maybe that's part of the sadness of the watching that documentary, is knowing while you're watching it, and all these pictures and videos of Gord Downie as a kid in high school, and you just know... There's a sense, I did at least, have a sense that you know how this is going to end and how fucking sad it was. And when you finally get to that episode where, you know, Gord's been diagnosed and he's going through all these treatments and you think, what the fuck, man? 53 years old.
Such a huge chunk of Canadiana, and to have it taken away because 53 is young. Look at a lot of the rock stars nowadays, right into their 80s.
Yeah.
You know, and, yeah. Hey, speaking of death, I just noticed this morning, somehow. You know, Don Cherry, and I don't know how familiar you are, but he had a son, Tim.
Yeah, I know,
Tim. A daughter, Cindy. Well, it turns out Cindy died in July, suddenly. In mid-July, she died suddenly.
I didn't know that.
You know, the story is Cindy had given Tim a kidney so he could live. But I had never heard anything about Cindy Cherry dying in July.
Yeah, neither had I.
That poor old bugger, it's tough, obviously, to lose a kid, no matter, you know, Don's over 90 now, but for him to suffer that is not good.
No, it's not. And not to, thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that. But I want to get back just quickly. It turns out, and I've been thinking about this. This might be my favorite hip song. Are hard to
endure. Right.
I mean, I've always liked it, but for some reason, it has some new poignancy to me. By the way, I did get that stuff from Boone. So when we were Humble and Fred, the rockin' Edge Morning Show on one of North America's premier alternative radio stations, we did have some hip-related stuff.
Greasy, Humble and Fred, you are.
That was a little parody of Greasy Jungle, but this was easily my favorite.
Over.
And then we would play the song, and it would be like, the fucking guys, how cool are they?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Good old times. Good memories.
Yeah, man. So can you do a little something for me here? Because we're going to run into, which one should I play now? I was going to play that one again. I love this song, too.
Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, yes. Canada's yes. number one group benefits plan for small business. Part of the Chambers plan as well is, you know, you can have a life insurance attachment to it as well, just so you know. Prescriptions, dental, all sorts of therapies, an HR component, the mental health aspect of your health, lots of help that way, the Teladoc system, all sorts of products under the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan. If you have a small business, you've thought about having a benefits plan for your people, go to chamberplan.ca today. Get all the information. Again, as I say, you can buy in at different levels, so there's all sorts of products in which you can choose. It really is, it's great for small business because, again, it's very affordable. You'll find out that. And they do a great job on holding the line year to year on premiums because that's important for small business. Again, we talk about it. Take action today. Go to chamberplan.ca and find out all about it.
Okay, I take it back. This is one of my favorite Tragically Hip songs. What's your favorite Tragically Hip song, Fred?
Probably Ahead by a Century. A close second, though, is Fully Completely. I love that song from the album, Fully Completely.
Okay, well, let me get just that for you.
You know, the way, anyway.
You know, I like Ahead by a Century. I think, here's the thing for me as a disc jockey, I liked Ahead by a Century because it was a fun song to talk over. But as far as going from, like, something we were doing to, like, you know, going back into DJ mode, I like this one. Because we could kind of go, okay, thanks, Fred. We'll have Mary Ellen's news coming up here in a second. Traffic as well. Freddie's sports comment. But first, here's the Tragically Hip, Courage. Edge 102. Watch the band. Like a great song to introduce. Fully Completely is the song you like. Which also, by the way, that album also has Wheat Kings, this song, Locked in the Trunk of a Car, At the 100th Meridian. God damn.
Oh, yeah.
This is the song you were talking about. Like there's 15 songs I could name right now, like those, that were either huge hits or, you know, tracks people loved. Looking for a Place to Happen is also another cool song. Bring me back in shackles. Hang me long out in the sun.
Exonerate me. Forget about me. You know, another song I was really into this weekend listening to was So Hard Done By.
Remember that? Mm-hmm. Another great song. I do like this song, Fully Completely. I also like this song, and very quiet. Again, not the greatest to introduce, but just kind of, again, such a great, evocative, Gordon Downie poem set to music. Yeah, you think about how many songs that we played on the Edge. Way more than, say, the average radio station. Mm-hmm. Because we would have gone way deep on these albums. The beautiful love, the dangerous tug, we get to feel small from high up above. I wanted to get your thoughts about this. The band, like, the documentaries features the band guys as they are now. And of course, you get to see them from, you know, the time they were in high school till they're in their 50s. You know who's changed the most? The drummer.
Oh, yeah. Johnny Fay, yeah.
Johnny Fay, like,
Looks like a distinguished old man.
No, exactly. Like a professor.
Mm-hmm.
Just remarkable. All the other guys, just like older, they look like older versions of themselves in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But Johnny looks like a completely different guy. Anyway,
it's funny, you know. Rush never left Toronto or Canada.
No, that's right.
These guys, other than Gord moving to Toronto for that segment, it's like they never left Kingston.
No, I know.
You know what I mean? You know, you're Canada's biggest rock band. You think at the very least they'd end up in Toronto, but they just never. Even now, to see those clips of them just walking around Kingston, still there.
Going to the Canadian Tire.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
And I don't know what the point is there. Why wouldn't they? It's their hometown. It's just, it gets back to that thing that their principles were pretty, you know, pretty strong.
And we talked a little bit earlier about our Kelsey's event tomorrow night. Dan, if you're listening, we could, if you've had your toast, can you come and do the news? We're going to try, we're working on some sampling of the Humble and Fred beer. It is still available, Humble and Fred beer. Let me get some Humble and Fred beer music. How about that, huh? Here we go. Stonehooker's Brewmasters built the Humble and Fred all-Canadian ale from the ground up. It's got Canadian malt, hops, yeast, and water, all natural ingredients, and it's a year-round, easy-drinking thirst quencher. At the brewery, you can get it there. And as we mentioned before, they will give you free delivery for a $50 order or more around sort of the Lakeshore GTA area. Outside, $100 or more, you can get our beer. And it's really very, I think it's very affordable. You should mention to everyone that this is what it says. Stonehooker gives 5% off for a 12-pack and 10% off for a 2-4. Not bad for a craft brew tall boy. All right, Dan?
All right. I like those beers.
Dan, were you ever a Tragically Hip fan?
I enjoy their music. I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan.
What's your favorite Tragically Hip song?
Head by a Century. I like that song a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we all concur. That's a good one.
To,
I like that one. This is another one I love. New Orleans is Sinking.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. I bet you I could play 5 songs right now and you'd go, yeah, I like that song too. You want to, All right. Dan.
Mm.
When you were in the 1930s, when you were like 25 or something, whatever.
Yeah.
This was sent to us by a regular listener called Manfred Bayer, who I would have saved this for emails, but we got too many for Wednesday, so I thought I'd play a little bit of it now, Dan. This is like from when Dan, just to show you that when Dan, when you were a kid, there were still dirty lyrics and dirty music, right?
Yeah, it was, because it was a dirty time.
It was a very dirty time in 1940s.
Dirty time, yeah. It's, you know, like they did weird things and then they became very, they clamped up.
So, Dan, this is from when you were in high school and it's called I Like It in the Pooper.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready, yeah. Love it.
Not gonna beat around the bush. I'm a gal who likes it in the tush. What I'm saying is I'm a backdoor girl. I don't ever need any lube, so just nail me, don't be a rube. I'll just bend over and hopefully I'm screwed. I know what I'm saying is scandalous, but only 'cause they can't handle this. But sex is something I can never resist. I'm a gal who likes it in the pooper. Hey pal, if you're hung, that'd be super.
What do you think of that, Dan? I'm a gal that likes it in the pooper.
Shut up and put your wheels.
If you're hung, that would be super.
Hey fella, are you going my way? Come on and drive down my dirt highway. Keep on
hey, are you going my way? Come down and drive down my dirt highway. That's classic shit right there, Dan.
Classic.
Is that really from Times Gone By, or it's a remake. Yeah,
okay. I think it's somebody's just trying to be funny, Fred.
Yeah. Is that
just
an AI?
Trying to be funny.
AI did that.
I don't think so. Dan, are you ready emotionally to do the news?
Oh, I can. Yeah, I can handle it.
Well, I'll tell you what. We already talked a little bit about Bodog, but let's hear from them.
Looking for a way to relax after a long day? Come on. Tired of being notified by life's bells and whistles?
Yeah, I'm going to need that draft tomorrow.
When you're ready to stop working so hard, you know it's time to play.
Yes.
It's easy to find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. Play free casino games, check out our beginner's guides, and get poker tips. Visit Bodog.net today. Hashtag make a play.
Yeah, Dan Duran's news brought to you by Bodog.
Now, here's to a fella named Dan Duran, a hell of a guy with a hella big wang, the quintessential anchor man. His voice is nice and low.
Huh.
Dan Duran, the anchorman, comes and asks for credentials. He has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the anchorman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care, and his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And now live from Lakeside. Seems like the rain has started to subside, and so, with his sunshiny attitude and beaming face, with news and views, here is Anchorman Dan Duran.
Well, since we've been gone, we learned about ditty parties with 1,000 bottles of baby oil standing by. Pornhub black Nazi loves porn, and Trudeau is going on the Late Show tonight. But let's talk about nursing in Canada. You know,
go ahead, nursing. Fred, because we missed a little bit of that. Yeah,
you warbled out there. So the three things again were what?
We've got the ditty parties with $1,000 a baby oil standing by.
Right.
A porn-hating black Nazi.
Oh, right. Yes, the government. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mark Robinson.
Mark Robinson, yeah.
Piece of shit. Who Trump said was the second coming. No. He's Martin Luther King
on steroids.
Too.
Yeah. He said, this fucking, anyway, it's fucking, fuck. Anyway. Go ahead. So, yes.
It's funny. You can't find any part of that story on Fox. Nothing about this guy.
No, of course not.
His whole staff left him last night. But anyway, go ahead. We digress.
Yes.
We digress.
That's what we do here. And then, as soon as Dan mentioned something to do with Trump, it's like, we digress. Okay, Dan, that fucker.
We weave. We weave just like
we're weaving.
Trump does.
That's what we do. We weave because we're geniuses. Yes. So the three was that guy, the ditty thing, and
Trudeau. He's going on the Late Show tonight.
Late Show with Stephen Colbert?
Yeah.
For what?
Mm-hmm. Just to hang out and say nice things, I guess.
By the way, Fred, what were your thoughts? What did you think about the Trudeau part of that documentary?
I thought it was fantastic because I know they had a close relationship, and it was heartfelt and it was genuine. And
I thought he acquitted himself very well, especially at not the press conference, but the morning he came out and announced that his friend Gord Downie had died. I thought his tone was, you know, just perfect.
The only question I might have, and there's probably an answer to it, was the Jay Baruchel.
Yeah, why was he wearing fucking shorts and looked like he just got out of bed?
You know what I mean? And it's good, a couple of comments, but to me, why so much? Like, I get Dan Aykroyd, of course.
Well, also, Jay Baruchel is a pretty famous guy in Canada, famous movie star.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't even know that.
Yeah,
I don't.
Yeah, he's pretty big.
No, he is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Dan, so what is your actual story?
Yeah, I've been in a show with him, actually.
Yeah, Dan's been in shows with everybody.
Oh, well, then he's huge.
Ooh, why wasn't Dan quoted? My favorite song's head by Century.
Yeah, where was I?
Yeah. I have a big weenie.
I was just going to talk about private nursing in Canada. A report came out today. We spend $1.5 billion a year on private nurses. So these are nurses that could have been in the public system, but they've gone to the private system. This is about six times as many nurses as they were in 2020 are working for the for-profit staffing agencies. And they charge about $133 an hour for a nurse, which I think the normal rate is around $50-$60 an hour for, a qualified nurse in a hospital on salary. But since the pandemic hit, health facilities started to rely on these companies more and more because, you know, nurses were, you know, not available for working because for multiple of reasons. And then also a lot of nurses got out of the public system because they were just getting burnt out.
Yeah.
And they just weren't, you know, taking care of the nurses well enough, and the private agencies are doing that. So I guess really, there's a lot of money in, way too much money going to for-profit agencies for these higher paid positions when they should just try and start figuring it out.
Okay.
And bringing the nurses back into the public system. And there's money in nurses. So maybe watch out for Humble and Fred's super excellent nursing rentals.
Well, if I had time, I can't take time away from my practice to nurse, but I mean, I had no idea the nurses were making a lot of dough, $130 an hour, man. You know, you work 8 hours, you make a grand. But, you know, a lot of that stuff in home is just wiping old people's asses, which, you know, I'm already doing. I'm already doing that for myself.
Personal job.
I'm doing that good job for myself. You know, I can't do it for everybody.
I could nurse someone with my left tit. Yep, no problem.
That would be great. Mm-hmm. Come on, Grandpa. Let's have a little sip. Have you done everything you need to do today?
Aaron Yeeman used to grab my boobs and go, come on, give me some milk. Give me some milk.
Fuck. That's so immature.
I say.
Have you done everything you're supposed to do?
No, we got one more here.
Well, then, fuck. Let me get you some more. Get you some more tragically hip.
That's
song.
A good lead into a sponsor. Well then, fuck.
Very professional. That's what this is.
Pause. Yeah, it's seamless.
Pausing.
Yeah.
Pausing.
Okay.
Hey, this week the Retirement Sherpa will be by to talk about taxation. Tim Niblett, a portfolio manager. Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Remember, standing offer. If you have a portfolio not sure it's performing the way it should, Sherpa J will have a look at it and give you an honest assessment, and you take it from there. Decide what you want to do. But again, they offer this offer, so take advantage of this offer. Tim Niblett, the Retirement Sherpa.
Okay, I take it back. This is also one of my favorites.
Oh, this song is just... just crazy, and what it's about.
Oh, I know.
Pushing around the weather vane, Jesus.
Yeah, I'm surprised Dan Duran wasn't featured in the hip documentary.
Just a small quote.
Just a quick. And now here's movie anchorman Dan Duran. What's the quote? I like a head by a century.
Yeah.
20 years for nothing. Well,
this is like, how do you not like this song?
No, I know.
Even if you don't like the hip.
No one's interested in something you didn't do.
Oh, well. But hey. You know, it's funny when you have a particular taste and someone says they don't like it. It's like you're a little taken aback. Like Brad there. It's like, whoa, wow, that's interesting. But I've made those comments about Rush. It just, you know, it doesn't land with me.
Yeah, but I mean, even with Rush, you know, like, I couldn't sit through an entire Rush album unless I was being, like, held hostage somewhere. But there's three or four songs of theirs that I really like, that I appreciate.
A lot more strident. Yes.
Well, it's complicated. I'm not, you know, I can't do complicated.
I can't keep up on it.
I can't do complicated.
I can't keep up with that.
So, all right. So just a quick programming note. We're not on tomorrow. That's right. We're not on tomorrow, but we are on
Wednesday. We're not on tomorrow.
No, we're not, Dan.
Oh, okay.
Tomorrow is...
Oh, I forgot about that.
Oh, did you?
Well, I asked Fred this morning. I thought we weren't, and then we were, and then, okay.
Tomorrow is another golf opportunity.
Right.
And there's only one more left in the season after tomorrow.
One more golf opportunity.
Well, it's a tournament. Tomorrow's a big tournament. Oh, right. I have one more big tournament on the 7th of October. Was that, are we working on October 7th? Let me see here. Yes, so I'll have to take that day off.
All right.
But tomorrow,
how's your tournament play been overall?
Pretty good.
How are you?
I would say this was a pretty good season for me. It wasn't a Hall of Fame season, but it was definitely a decent season. If I were a PGA Tour player this season, I would have made. I would definitely have been in the top 50 on the money list. Maybe not top 30, but I've done decent. You know,
right?
Including last week, I did pretty well. Anyway, so we're off tomorrow. Wednesday's a big day. We're going to do a show Wednesday morning. We'll do another one Wednesday night that will be released on Thursday morning. You will get three Humble and Fred shows this week. Okay? Okay, people?
Okay.
All right.
It's a three show week.
It's a three show week.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a very special one on Wednesday evening. You can still get tickets. There's no tickets, just show up. Humble and Fred at humbleandfredradio.com. Just put a podcast party in the subject line or something like that. It's our 13th anniversary. Our 13th anniversary of doing this podcast is coming up.
Yeah, crazy. And they said it couldn't be done. That's they right. said. Yeah, no, they said it can't be done.
We yep. said it couldn't be done.
Oh, mm-hmm. They, huh?
Yeah, we said we can't do this.
No, said, no.
We got no and time for
critics,
this shit.
Oh, this can't be done.
Oh, the many
critics.
All
these there was guys was actually think they're going to go 13 years. Can't be done.
All
can't
there was done. Critics. I had picked out.
Critics.
I had picked out a little treat, but now I can't find it.
Like an oral treat?
Well, no, yeah, because I wanted to play something from, oh, I know where I put it. Oh, I can find it. This is some of the things we did during the podcast years. These are things that were produced, little promos or little bits. And this is something that our friend Jamie did about going to a rub and tug.
Pleasured with a rub and tug.
Not true.
Felt real good. Fred told his wife she was mortified that Howie went to a place where a strange lady takes his luggage in her hand. It's clear she and Fred will never do a couple's rub night out next week. We'll never do a couple's rub next week.
So there you go. There you go. Another Humble and Fred show comes to an end. All right.
This episode of Humble and Fred was brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa, the Chambers Plan, Boron One, Bodog, our returning sponsor, Kelsey's Original Roadhouse, and our newest sponsor, Ridley Funeral Home. For contests and comments, we read all of the emails, humbleandfred at humbleandfredradio.com. Tell us what you think. Your email could show up on Wednesday's show, humbleandfred at humbleandfredradio.com. And here's something you can do. Help us out by subscribing to the podcast, maybe sharing an episode, and rating the podcast helps as well. For Humble and Fred from the Richard Bullis Zoom Theater, I'm Dan Duran. And remember, even if you're a zombie, enjoy every goddamn day.
Handouts, two turntables and a microphone, bottles and cans, or just clap your hands, or just clap your hands.